Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Wake Up 9/11. I'm your host, James Easton, and today I have with me Doug Michael. Doug, you're from upstate New York?
Yes, that's correct, James. How you doing? Thanks for having me today.
Oh, right on. I've been really excited about this opportunity. And, I'm on hiatus right now in London, Ontario. And this is a good time to talk. So we had discussed a little earlier, just got to know a little more about what we know of stuff. And I had asked you to do maybe some kind of synopsis of something from one of your videos, which is what really got me interested in talking to you. Your video is astounding. I mean, it blew my mind. Not many people could do that. It's just because you've researched so much, but you've been at it for a long time. Like you said, 17 years?
Yes, going on 18. I can't even believe it's been that long, but yes, almost 2 decades.
Wow. See, I've only been at 9/11 for 2.5 years. I think with the internet, all of this information is getting spread around real fast. I was going to get you to talk a little bit about your personage, your person. There's all kinds of crazy stuff involved with the certificate of live birth and social insurance numbers and stuff like that. But
yes.
Let me throw it to you.
Sure. Well, you're Canadian, I'm American. I think most people understand that Canada is a Commonwealth of England, of the British Crown. But what most people don't know is that so is America. I mean, the colonists won on the fields of battle during the Revolutionary War, but the British didn't give up. They were able to gain control of the country through the financial system, which if people study history and read what these founders warned us about, they basically said, never let the bankers come in. They're more dangerous than standing armies, as Thomas Jefferson said. And what happened was that the United States had gone bankrupt. And this opened the door for the Federal Reserve Bank to come in and take control of the monetary system, exactly what people like Jefferson and Andrew Jackson warned against. Do not let the bankers come in. And, you know, a lot of Americans don't realize that the government has nothing to do with printing currency or commissioning the what currency is valued at or the production, the printing of currency. This is done by a group called the Federal Reserve Bank, which is a privately owned, self-governing entity. In fact, the government in America is loaned money by the Federal Reserve Organization, and our taxation pays the interest on those loans. Now, James, most people know who Woodrow Wilson was. He was the 34th President of the United States, but how many have ever heard of a man called Colonel Edward Mandel House? He was behind the scenes. He was Wilson's chief advisor, and they concocted this plan called social insurance. In America, we call it Social Security. And you're issued a Social Security card and what's called a certificate of live birth or a birth certificate at the time of your birth. And what people don't realize is that these documents are basically, it's your tag. It's your, I'll say it's your slave tag. Your physical vessel is owned, not by you nor your parents. It's owned by, well, in America, it's the Treasury Department. Your birth name is actually listed on the stock markets. So we're commodities to this ruling elite. And it's all on paper. It's all there if people care to research it. Once the Federal Reserve Bank came in 1913, the same year that the graduated income tax was introduced in this country, is when the country became in full control of the international banking cartel, which has its headquarters, of course, in London, in the inner city, in the Temple Bar. So this is where the financial control of the world is. And it's all directed from there. So, you know, the First Revolutionary War, we won on the fields of battle, but you know the British didn't give up, and we are beholden to the Crown Corporation. In fact, the United States changed the name of the country from the Virginia Company to the United States in 1817, I believe it was. And if you look at the congressional record, it's clearly spelled out. And also the U.S. code, that the republic is long gone. It is a corporation. The United States has been a corporation since the late 1800s on paper. So we are basically chattel for the corporation, and that is, that's what's signified by the certificate of live birth and the Social Security card.
Okay.
And again, this is established.
All right. What struck me about this is that what was it? The okay. Somebody did. I just had it, but the dog distracted me. She's drinking water. Too much. You got to stop her from drinking too much. Anyway. The certificate of live birth. That was very interesting. You know, that's very interesting stuff. People should know this. I was actually imagining while you were talking that I don't mean to put America down, people of America down, or anybody for that matter, but these people do, and not in multiple senses, but in the sense that we're all like cattle, right? We're all like just grazing along, and we're part of a corporation, and the fence is the United States border, and we're just mindless idiots that don't know anything, except some of us do, but few, it would seem. And there's the certificate of live birth and the corporation, which I'm glad you talked about. I just thought to keep going because you're probably waiting for me to ask a question, but I'll let you go. This is all tied together with a whole bunch of other stuff, so keep going.
Okay, sure. When you're born, you're given a legal name. And what I try to stress to people, and even, see, we're under, and this is the entire globe, not just the Western world or America or Canada, but we're under what's called contract or commercial law. There's multiple kinds of law forms. You have civil law, you have statutory law, you have criminal law, there's all kinds, but it all operates in the framework of commerce or commercial law. So it stands to reason that there would be a framework to govern, let's say, Japan's doing business with Germany, they're trading cars for raw materials. There needs to be some kind of framework so that these two countries can conduct business within some kind of uniform policy, and there is. It's called commercial law or contract law. Commercial law is the law of contracts, and that's first and foremost what we're under because of this corporate system. So your legal name is not who you are. All that is, it is a legal fiction set up for you at the time of your birth so that you can conduct in this system of commerce. It's a commercial system, a corporate system. But the problem arises, James, when people don't realize that and they identify that name on the birth certificate or the driver's license or the social insurance card with who they are. Once you do that, you have real problems. You become surety. The word surety in legal terms means one who is responsible for another's debt. So we operate under the assumption that we are that name. We are willingly becoming surety in this commercial system. No, ladies right. and gentlemen, you are not the legal name. You are the living soul. And even commercial law will recognize this. They're not going to tell you. They're not going to teach you this in school, in your slave training. There's no courses you could take at the university. You have to pick up the slack on your own and study commercial law. But that's really what we are under, is a system of commerce. And if we have that knowledge, we can operate accordingly. Like if a police officer stops me and grabs my ID, if I decide to show it to them and ask me, is this you? I have a far different answer than most people would. Of course that's not me. That's a legal name printed in all capital letters with a likeness on a piece of paper. How could that possibly be me? I'm here. I'm the living soul. And I think people really should get their minds around to the distinction between the two. And you'll notice, too, on any legal document, whether it's a driver's license or a Social Security card, birth certificate, even credit card statements or mortgage bills, you know, mortgage statements, your name is always printed in all capital letters. If anyone out there listening, put it to the test. Look at your bank statement. Look at your driver's license. Your name is always printed in all capital letters. And this signifies that that entity is a corporate fiction. Your name is a corporate fiction. It's not who you are. And I think in this day and age, it's very important for people to begin to wrap their minds around that. So we operate under a system of commerce. The United States, we're actually ready to enter into, I believe it's our third bankruptcy cycle. And what happens is, like in the last one, in 1913, around the time when the Federal Reserve Bank came in, the creditors forgave the debt, but in exchange, they wanted something. They're going to want something in return. Well, they got the sovereignty of the people. The first bankruptcy cycle, the sovereignty of the states was taken, and this one, it was the sovereignty of the people, hence the registration with the birth certificate and the Social Security card, which basically tags you as their property. And I know a lot of people will reel in disbelief at hearing that, but it's absolutely true, and it's right in the United States Code. You are considered chattel or property of these international bankers.
Can you define chattel?
Chattel simply means property, like real estate that belongs to another. It's just a legal term for property.
Okay.
So this is how this ruling class sees you, ladies and gentlemen, as their property to do with as they will, as their slave.
Okay. Now, can you describe a danger to not being aware of this?
There's many.
Okay.
First of all, legal troubles. If you're going to identify with that legal name, that legal fiction, you got all kinds of trouble because now you're liable for that legal entity's debts. You're liable for those debts. You become surety. You're at the mercy of those who claim positions of authority. That's another issue I get into a lot, James, is this absolutely ridiculous and erroneous belief in authority. The word authority comes from Latin auctoritatum, which means author. So
right.
If you're claiming that someone else has authority over you, you're saying that they're the author of your experience. It's erroneous. Authority is the belief that some have the legal right through violence and coercion to rule over the rest of us. Excuse me, and we buy into it. So that's another major problem with identifying with this paradigm, is the erroneous belief in authority. So,
okay.
I mean, we droves of people believe in that idea, and as the author Larkin Rose claims, it's the most dangerous superstition. In fact, he has a book of the same title, which I recommend to anyone. It's very, very eye-opening. But this belief in authority is really going to be our downfall. Because, again, it's this belief that a small ruling class has the right, through violence, to rule over the rest of us. And we buy it. It's really nothing more than a contract. It's a claim. It's a legal claim that's made by the few, and the masses fall in line. You know, we forget, especially here in America, the police work for us. They're public servants. They are paid through our taxation. But it's not like that anymore. Now, we've got the police running rampant in this country, murdering with impunity, armed to the teeth like military, destroying freedom on a level that would have made Hitler envious, you know? So once you identify, you've got all kinds of problems when you identify with that legal fiction.
Okay, another one is ignorance. You cannot, I remember you saying that if you're ignorant of this and you say, yes, that is me, then, and you identify, then by way of the fact that you agree to it and you're ignorant of the fact that you don't have to, then you are bound.
That's correct.
Is that right?
That's
okay.
Absolutely correct. The commercial system operates under contract law, which is basically offer and acceptance. So if you have an authority claiming, I have authority over you, and then you agree to that, you've accepted that claim, so you're liable. It really is all
okay.
About offer and acceptance.
I want to venture off into something that I know you understand and you can explain very clearly,
because
you're really good at that. But the point is that I want to ask is, can you opt out? Can you say, I'm a sovereign entity, screw you?
Well, there are people that have success with that, but I look at it a little bit different, James. We are sovereign by the very fact that we exist.
Okay.
See, it's like kind of utilizing the tools the system has provided. I do not need a piece of paper or a contract claim to claim that I'm sovereign. I'm sovereign by the very fact that I exist.
Okay.
We are all sovereign beings, every being on the planet.
So it's inherent or by default, it's that's what we are. We are human beings first, and they have tricked us into accepting the terms and limitations and so on. And you know, we trick ourselves. It's hilarious.
That's right.
And we fool ourselves by word of mouth and by just not only ignorance, but like it's not even stupidity. It's what's the word I'm looking for? It's like
conditioning. I think it's the unwillingness to initiate the journey of the unlearning process. We, you know, we go to school and nice teachers tell us what's what, and loving parents tell us what's what, and maybe we go to church and the nice preachers tell us what's what, and then we have the mainstream media to tell us what's what. And I think we're just trained our entire lives to not question, because like people like you and I that do question the official version of events, we're lunatics right off the bat just for questioning. It doesn't matter if our research is credible, true, or facts-based. That doesn't matter. You're not in line with the official mainstream way of seeing things, then you're a lunatic right off the bat. And to me, that is very detrimental to human progress, as we've seen through history. But nowadays, right, there's really no excuse, James. We have tools we never did. We have instant communications. We have the internet. We have the ability to network with one another. There is no excuse for this mass ignorance. I believe it's willful ignorance. It's very difficult for a person to examine everything they think they know. But in my mind, that's what's required to really make any progress.
Ignorance is bliss, they say. I think I coined it. Maybe someone said it before me, but, you know, nothing's original in the universe. Everything's all... Okay, let me say that again. Nothing's original by human beings. Everything is sort of like repeated over time, and everything's a cycle of blah, 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 blah. But ignorance is not bliss. It's complicity. If you're ignorant of the system that's being forced on you and how it's being forced, and that you don't have to take it, then you're complicit in the system. and along with ignorance and stupidity and apathy and carelessness and selfishness and a number of other negative factors, people are dooming themselves. And I think we're coming to a crux, and you were talking about the third instance of bankruptcy.
Yes, we're on the verge of it. What are they going to take next? You know, I think, and I know this from research, they're going to institute implantable microchips at birth. Instead of a card and a piece of paper that binds you as their chattel, it will be absolute control. It'll be microchips under the skin at birth. They've already been proposing this since at least 1999. That's, in fact, what got me into this type of research, was looking at that. And, you know, it's snowballed over the years, but they're already in full development. In fact, we've got people that are microchipped already all in various countries. I remember in Barcelona, Spain, a few years back, I was reading about how clubgoers willingly got microchips so that they didn't have to stand in line. They could enter the VIP areas of the clubs. So they'll embrace this technology as the next great human achievement, not even realizing that they're being completely enslaved. Those devices are transceivers, which means they could send and receive a signal. And I think that's where we're headed, is they're going to start wanting to tag people at birth electronically. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the number one thing to say no to. And who knows, now they're so small they could institute them through forced vaccination campaigns. We've just seen mandatory vaccines be pushed in California. They passed a bill to make mandatory vaccines for adults. So
right, yeah.
we're really teetering on the edge as a species. And like we were talking about earlier, America will either lead the way out of the pit or into the pit. And it's amazing. America is being used to destroy America, hence events such as 9/11. I mean, they came right out and tell you in their documents. But, yeah, it's a very precarious time.
Go ahead.
I was going to say it's a very precarious time for the human species. And I do believe, as I've felt for many years now, that we have reached the crossroads where either we're going to get it right or we're going to march the road straight to extinction.
Okay. You know, none of this phases me, but most people who are in the dark, I mean, literally, they're not illuminated. They have no idea what's going on. They just live their daily lives in the humdrum and the, you know, material possessions, and drive your metal box coffin to work and back, and, you know, work your whole life for a few years of retirement. it's all a fabrication in reality.
It is. I call it a simulacrum. Right, an artificial reality. That's exactly what it is. It's a false reality that's been kind of superimposed over actual third-dimensional reality. And if you have a person, you know, your whole life you're taught, you're free, land of the free, and all this crap. So it's very hard for the average person to wake up to the fact that they're not. It's basically like free-range cattle or free-range chickens. We're still in the coop, but we're allowed to kind of move around within that coop. Unlike other nations that are blatantly fascist governments, where they know that their governments are oppressive, it's a little bit different of a situation in the Western world. We're taught our whole lives that we're free, when actually we're property of this corporation. It's amazing.
Yeah, especially when they, you know, they use the example of slavery as being the blacks in the 1800s and so on, as the contrast by which to compare. You know, you're free to drive your car down the highway. You're free to go to work. But all of this stuff is actually constrictive and binding. And you know, you're free to press the gas pedal to, you know, 160. But when the cop stops you, you're going to get a fine or whatever. I don't know. Can you opt out of a fine?
Well, if you understand commercial law and remember that it's offer and acceptance, they're always
right
around it. I have delved into it to that extent. I've basically looked at it to connect with all my other research, but there are people out there that have had enormous success just by understanding contract law. They've gotten out of tickets, and they've gotten out of bankruptcies, and gotten out of mortgage payments. So there is a power in understanding legal empowerment. There really is. I haven't delved too far into it to actually put it into action, getting out of tickets for things like this. But, I mean, understanding it does not give the person a right to just act irresponsibly either. There's a level of responsibility that's involved with knowing any kind of knowledge, I think.
For sure. Absolutely. For sure.
And I'd like to raise a question, too. People think they're free. Here in America, the average worker works for 4 months. 4 months out of the year just to pay their taxes. So my question is, if stealing 100% of someone's labor is slavery, at what percentage is it not slavery? Was it 10%, 15, 20? You know, the product of your labor is stolen to pay mostly for what? For wars, for your own enslavement, basically. So 4 months out of the year, our taxes go to this international banking cartel to erect the walls of enslavement all around us. So we pay to enslave ourselves.
And to bomb the shit out of other people.
That's right.
I was going to say, I understand your expression there about the percentage of how much of a slave am I? What percentage of a slave am I? And this can be said about just about everything. I mean, people look at their left hand and their right hand and think there's only two options. There's two sides to a coin. However, there's like a sphere of consciousness about anything, and that you can be very complex about understanding, you know, degrees or percentages of, you know, I hate you 30%, but I love you 60%, and I'm ambivalent to 10%. You know. Right now, I'm ambivalent. No, anyway. I'm just saying that people don't think very hard. They don't use their brains, their God-given mind. And
that's right. It's an epidemic, unfortunately.
Yeah. What say you about that? I know you got something to say about that.
Sure. Like I said earlier, I think it's actually willful ignorance. And it does tie in a lot to psychology in my mind. You're dealing with an entire culture that's buried in what I call ego-centered consciousness, or this whole me-ism philosophy, where as long as I got mine, what do I care what's going on in the world? Or what do I care about the future of our, you know, generations? But I think it is really willingly embraced ignorance. Like I said to you earlier, there's no excuse. We have tools we never did before. If people really cared to examine what they believe and, you know, initiate the unlearning process and really wake up, the tools are available do it. But I think that, you know, it really does have to begin on the individual level. It has to begin with that willingness to unlearn, that willingness to understand the different aspects of the psyche. We're stuck in ego consciousness, which is a very, very small aspect of the psyche. That is not right. who you are. You're not the name on the birth certificate, and you're certainly not the thing you think your thoughts with. That is a very, very small aspect of the psyche. So I think that's a big part of the problem, James, is that we have droves of people stuck in that ego consciousness, identifying with the name and identifying with the thing they think their thoughts with, thinking that that's them. And that causes a real problem. When you're in ego consciousness, you already know everything. You're not willing to unlearn. You're not willing to examine. But I think it's a daily re-examining of everything you think you know. Any good research will tell you that. Always put to scrutiny what you think you know, because there's always room to expand and to learn more. At least that's my experience has showed me that. So we have,
like to make,
you know...
Sorry.
Go ahead, sir.
I like to make an illusion that a connection between our mind and the universe, and that our minds are infinitely capable of understanding, of thinking, of knowledge, and knowing, and so on, just as the universe is infinite in every direction. Or even if it isn't, it's pretty fucking big. So
yeah.
It's like... I guess what I'm saying is that there's always room to improve. That's a standard saying, but the way you're saying it is, you know, always re-examine. Like, if you're like, the wall is blue, and then the next day you're like, maybe it's teal, and the next day you're like, I think it's aqua. And, you know, like, you go through a learning process as you re-examine and... It's testing your mind. It's working your mind. I don't know. Old people like to do crossword puzzles and stuff, but I think that's good. But it's like having a gun and never shooting it. It's like at a rifle range, or you know, like or whatever, getting your marksmanship. And so. People have the tools, they just don't, so most people don't even know how to use them. And
That's right. There's
a sort of general understanding that kids these days all have cell phones that are, you know, irradiating their minds, that they have the entire internet at their fingertips, where you and I, years ago, had... what was, you know, 286s and before that Commodores and Amigas. These things were completely incapable of doing the things that we have now at on a tiny little cell phone. So I'm just saying that...
it's amazing. I've often said, too, I mean, like this generation, we were alive during the transition into the information age. These kids now are born into it. But as we've seen, these... tools that we never had before, most of the times are used as a means of distraction and a way to embrace willing ignorance. So at the top, these, you know, ruling class, they're clanking their glasses and laughing at us. Every tool's provided for us. What do we do with it? Well, hell, I'd rather watch a YouTube video of a monkey throwing crap at a tourist than educate myself. I mean, we don't have to go to university anymore. We could sit in a privacy of our own home and educate ourselves on damn near any topic we desire to. How many people actually do that? Not many, to be sure. Not many. It's more, you know, technology is a two-edged sword. It's a two-edged sword. It could be used for upliftment, and it could also be used for control. And unfortunately, that's the road that we're taking collectively, is that road of control and enslavement. So it could go both ways. But they are also trying to censor the internet and crack down, because there is an awakening, I've noticed. It's not a mass awakening. I don't think that's ever going to happen, where we'll just see the veil lift away and droves of people just wake up. It doesn't work that way. It's more of an individual thing. It's more of a grassroots type of thing, and it has to be initiated by the individual. Enlightenment has nothing to do with, oh, I see the light, and oh, the butterflies fly. No. It's a very destructive process, very destructive. It's becoming enlightened is the destruction of things you hold dear, and belief systems and paradigms and ideologies fall into the dust. It's very painful. And then if you have the courage to keep walking that road, that's when you really could be led towards the light, in my opinion.
I hear you on that. It's just like... for me, I mean, I talk about it openly, where before I think most people didn't talk about it because of fear of reprisal or fear of, you know, being called a lunatic or that kind of thing. I for a long time, I wondered why they speak about the truth in music, in lyrics, but it's just, it's a matter of, it's a veil of lies concealing the truth. Like they, it's like a game almost. What do you
Absolutely.
Think?
I couldn't agree more. A game is a great way to put it. And I would go so far as to say we incarnate here on purpose for the experience of it. But at the same time, I kind of feel like people like us that have the knowledge, it's almost our responsibility to act on what we know, because all this knowledge without action is not going to accomplish anything. And it took me a long time to realize that, James. I mean, I was in the silent minority for years. I had all this knowledge. And, you know, I just, last year at some point, I just had this overwhelming thought that, you know, maybe I should really do something with this, because to sit on it and not have an outflow, it's not good. It's, what good is it doing anybody? So I decided, okay, I'm going to start putting this out, and the results have been just absolutely monumental. I couldn't believe it. Suddenly I'm asked on radio programs. People contacting me from all over the English-speaking world almost every day. Videos penetrating into 186 countries. I mean, it's unbelievable. I never would have anticipated. But that is what shows me that people are becoming more receptive to this information, whereas 10 years ago, I was looked at as a lunatic and ridiculed, and it used to bother me. It doesn't anymore. It still happens. I don't really care anymore, though. I mean, if you've done your homework enough and you're sure of what you're talking about, then the onus is on someone else to disprove you. If you know what you're speaking is true and you get some troll who's just going to, you know, use ad hominem attacks and try to attack your character, well, the onus is on them to disprove what you know to be true. So that's where I stand. But anyone out there listening to this that has a lot of information about a particular topic, whether it's 9/11 or vaccine dangers or legal empowerment or whatever it may be, and you're sitting on this knowledge, put it out there. You never know who you might reach. You never know a difference that you can make in someone else's life by having the courage to stand up.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you for this interview. This is the first of a series we're going to do. I have to cut
Thanks
it
for having
because,
me, James.
No problem. This is excellent. I'm like going to put it up right away. And, you know, I think everybody can gain from this experience. So it's totally positive. It's all good. All right. So,
it's difficult to touch too in depth with such a short amount of time. You know, I could sit here and talk to you for 5 hours and not even begin to scratch the surface. But I do appreciate
you.
Researchers like you that have the courage to do what you're doing, and to give a platform to others to do it too. We need that. We need more people to do that.
And I think that's unfolding. You know, it's the universe unfolds as it should. All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon, and I'll send you the link, and I guess we'll cut it off now. So thanks
for having me. All right, James. Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye.
Thank you.